Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel.
And I'm assistant producer Christina Onnestad.
In this edition of Radio Curious, Christina Onnestad presents an interview with Leonard Benali, a Diné elder. Diné is the indigenous name for the Navajo people. Leonard Benali lived in an area called Big Mountain on the Navajo and Hopi reservations, close to the Arizona-New Mexico border. Leonard Benali died on October 11th, 2013.
I first met Leonard Benali when I heard Native Americans were unable to rebuild their homes or have livestock on Black Mesa in an area called Big Mountain because Peabody Coal wanted the coal-rich land below their feet. A Hopi Navajo land dispute erupted, or some claim was devised, to clear the Navajo from the area. As a result, an estimated 20,000 Diné people were displaced from the land in the 1970s. A couple hundred remain to this day, refusing to leave. Leonard Benali was one of them. I visited him over the years, filing radio reports from the region, and in 2012, he agreed to talk about his life. We began our conversation when I asked Leonard Benali to describe the boarding schools he was forced to live in as a child, one being the school for Navajo children in Tuba, Arizona.
Well, the first 3 years, it was pretty harsh. In those days, there was no such thing as child abuse laws. And then, yeah, we went through a lot of hardship in boarding school. Even with these attendants that works and all that, they would come in and, you know, they'll brutally beat you up for something that you couldn't do or learn or say something in English here and all that. That's how it was. It was a harsh reality. Then after my fourth year at the Tuba boarding school, it was a lot different. Then things beginning to ease up. It was kind of like a nightmare here. Because first, we were forced to talk English, and then we would be punished for speaking our own language here.
How would you be punished?
In a very strict way. They would, like, maybe put soap in our mouth there and telling us that the soap is going to wash out the dirty language, and they expected us to learn English overnight. But deep down, like myself, some of our parents had no knowledge of English. They were, both of them, my late parents were strictly traditional people. And then it took a while, you know, to get it. Then we were forced to go to church too. We'd be punished too, like if we didn't want to go to church. Even though when I was growing up that time, I had my late grandfathers here, and he was a medicine man. I would say my grandpa's a medicine man I don't need, but, you know, I'll be punished for it. And then the way they would punish you is like they'll give you hours, anywhere from 20 to 100 hours to work off your punishment. I didn't know what it was called. They're disciplining me or something, but in a way, I guess it can just mess with your mind.
So what kind of work did you do as punishment?
Well, would be like scrubbing up after everybody, cleaning toilets, cleaning floors, and mopping, you know, all these things. And they would make us wear a sign that said, "I'm a bad boy, stay away from me." And that's how we, you know, go to cafeteria lines there and all that. And then they would shave our heads, all our hairs off, and we'd be bald, like, you know, like how the military does it and all that. And then, you know, that's how we were punished and all that. And well, in those days, it was a lot different. Every kid was allowed to wear the same kind of clothes, like with white T-shirts. Everybody wore white T-shirts. If somebody had a sneaker, everybody would wear a sneaker and all that. But kind of like a military disciplining, I think. And that's why I didn't go to service, to the military service for that. I'm thinking that I already went here. Like I experienced it in my young childhood days, coming up.
So you mentioned earlier that your parents were traditional people. What do you mean by traditional? people?
Well, see, they were indigenous of Big Mountain here. And then so far I still consider myself indigenous here. So they had no knowledge of how the Western ways or the Western idea, what it was about. See, in those days, what they were teaching us was that we had our own autonomy here and all that. But now it's just pretty much everybody's going mainstream. Then everybody's going to, you know, going to college, university, and then you're saying that's a way of life and that's how it should be and, you know, whatever. But in the old days, our ancestors never went to school like that and all that, but they lived a long life, long and happiness. You know, these were the ways of life back then. Nowadays, all you hear is about crimes, all kinds, murders, you know, all these things that goes on, even out here in different part of the reservation.
So if people didn't go to school and universities, how did you train and operate as a society?
Well, in those days, we had our own indigenous autonomy, where like raising animals, livestock, having cornfields, or go hunting, you know, for, you know, prairie dogs, and then in the fall time would be like, you know, games like deers and all that. And that's how people survived it. Money was never a matter until the Western system came along. Then they bringing out, you know, giving people the wrong ideas, saying that if you have a big fat bank account, you'll make it. You are somebody. If you have nothing, you're a loser. You know, that's what they teach. But in our ways of life, in our culture, it's the opposite way. It's, you know, it's just a man in yourself, who you are, and know where you're going, know where you come from. And, you know, that's how it was. And, you know, they call it the Huzona Sha. You know, that's how they say it, part of the prayers and all that. So that's how our lives were, in the kind of like a ceremonial ways. In the morning, you have to get up, you know, pray in the afternoon time again. You pray in the evening, midnight. That's how people used to be a long time ago, but not anymore. But now it's just carrying a Visa card or a debit card. They think, you know, that's it. But, I mean, you know, that's not our ways of life as an Indian.
Are youth from Big Mountain continuing on with traditional ways?
Well, here we're see our reality out here is the harsh reality now. After all this policies came down, or the relocation laws that came down, you know, that makes it pretty hard for us living out here to continue our ways of life or our cultural ways of life. We're persecuted, you know, for our beliefs now. Whatever we try to do, we condemned it by these the mainstream people from the Navajo government or the Hopi tribal government.
Did you teach Diné to your children?
That's the only thing. That's what's, you know, keep us holding on to our, you know, to our life here, our culture, our land. That's what's, you know, that's how we're still keeping, you know, base, you know, touching base with everything. And I don't think in English, I don't think so. Because I'll be going to Bank of America or Wells Fargo, then, you know, to get something like that. Mm-hmm. Because what my grandfather used to say was, do not forget your language, because the language is holy, and it is very sacred here. And that's how we talk to our gods here. See, that's the language that they gave us is what we use to tell them what we want, not for them to tell us what they want. and all that. So that's how I think the Navajo language is still very important.
Do you speak Diné with your children?
Yes, I do. And then it's hard because they're pretty much over on the English side, but they comprehend, the Bizat, or the Navajo language here.
What year were the Navajo forced to relocate from this area called Big Mountain?
Well, everything started in the 70s, the mid-70s, 73, 74, 75. That was, we were brutally suppressed by the authorities.
How old were you?
I was a young teenager at the time, maybe 16, 17.
So what happened?
We were denied everything. We were not allowed to even, repair our homes or, nothing like that. It was pretty harsh. We were, suppressed it, too, by all these law agencies. They'd be coming around daily and all that. And then you would hear stories, in different part of the reservation, you might hear where elderly people getting roughed up by SWAT teams and all that. Well, they were eventually mercenaries that they gathered from across the Indian country. And then they hired them out here. But luckily, nobody got shot or anything.
How did your parents deal with the concept that they were going to have to leave their land and move elsewhere?
It was pretty harsh on them. They were stressed out and all that. And then people went into post-traumatic stress there, over these things. Because especially to these elders at the time, they had no idea. They were told that you are living now, you broke the law here and, something like that. Because, they were living on the wrong side of the fence line here. But to this day, we are probably the last man in the corner here. We've been still struggling for our democracy, justice, freedom. And then, one day, hopefully one day soon, we'll see it.
Why were people told they needed to relocate from this area?
Well, because of the mineral exploitation. Because of Peabody Coal Company, they want to mine a large portion of Black Mesa for its natural resource. In our belief, this is the liver of the Mother Earth here. And then what I was told, too, by my late mother, take care of the mountain here. So one day she told me that I'll be gone, but she'll be your mother. And then to this day, I believe it that way. We're just another child of Mother Earth here.
There was also a land dispute between the Hopi and the Navajo for this area.
It's just a biggest propaganda. That's what was called the Navajo and Hopi land dispute here. Because I have Hopi friends over in the village. Never, ever, whatsoever, I ever feuded with them or whatever, because we already knew where it was coming from. It was coming from the federal government. Then the central government of both sides, the Navajo and the Hopi side. And to this day, they are still like that.
So you're saying it was geopolitical, so to speak?
That's what it was. It's the politics. War is a matter of politics. So, yes, for many years, this whole Big Mountain territory was like a war zone, just like any damn war. Have its own casualties, have displacement people, and then people going into despair.
When you say this area was a war zone, can you describe for our listeners what that looked like?
Well, those days, we were heavily suppressed by armed police, heavily armed. They were caravanning around here. They had SWAT teams moving back and forth, you know, up these main roads, or, you know, going into people's houses there. And then people that are protecting their flock, by meaning sheep, and they might get roughed up by these things. You know, everything was used to be brutal.
Now, they also bulldozed homes, correct?
They did in some areas. And then just like what they did back in 2001 of August 17. That was, you know, I'll never forget that. Probably as long as I live, I'll probably take it to my grave. That was the day they desecrated the Camp Anami Sundance site here. There was supposed to be a religious freedom right for Native American. But when that happened, nothing was said.
Well, in this edition of Radio Curious, we're visiting with Leonard Benally. He's one of the last remaining resistors of relocation on Big Mountain in Arizona, on the Navajo Hopi Reservation. I'm Christina Onnestad. This is Radio Curious. Your parents resisted relocation, but not many people did. As I recall, nearly 20,000 Navajo were displaced over this geopolitical dispute. Can you describe what led your parents to refuse to leave their land?
They stood up against relocation. They didn't agree with it. These people already knew what it was about. It was about the mineral resource, what was underneath the ground. It was not about two group of people, Navajo and Hopi, going against one another like that. But that's how they put it, saying, you know, that, oh, yeah, we took the Hopi land, or we encroached it on the Hopi land. I mean, you know, that's out of their wild imagination here. But it was never, ever like that. But then it came down after years, after their passing, then all these things came out. It was about the coal. And then not only coal, there was other natural resources which they were after. And then there's this case called the Docket 196. It puts everything on the table like that, and then it tells about how this whole thing was started. There was just only a few key players. You know, they were the one that started it. I think it was Maurice Udall, the Udall families, and then there's this Barry Goldwater. They wanted the people out of here, but then they didn't get their way. But then some of us at this end here, yeah, we're willing to go down with the ship here. But then now, but you know, then we see here about a hopeful thing. We're in a hopeful situation because hope always lived in our heart.
So why did you choose to stay here?
This is where my umbilical cord was buried. And this is where the land knows me. Even if I go elsewhere, I wouldn't know nobody or, you know, nothing like that, because out here, this is my Aboriginal homeland. My ancestors, my forefathers, they were here, and then I was just born out here. And that's how I chose to stay, because I know if I go out there, I would be in the way of somebody. Because right now, when you go out there into the outside world, you're going to see sign that says no trespassing, you know. But because of here, we got all the space here. The people before me, I can say they were the one, you know, that stayed here. And then it goes down the line as far as to Anasazi people. They were the first one here. And then just like my late parents or my late mother used to say, we're only here for a short time. They had a different way of thinking. And then these people that went to school, like big universities and all that, they are a threat to our culture, to the society out here, because they are the ones that do not know how to say no. Do-da. They say yes. to everything, like to Peabody Coal Company, like to other big corporations that wants to come in and to extract mineral. They are the ones that say, we need the money. We need the economic here. Because a long time ago, like I was saying earlier, we had our own economic, our own indigenous autonomy here. Because in those days, people got to live a long life. But now it's not. After everybody started going mainstream, now you hear a lot of obesities. That's what's taking out the people.
So an estimated 20,000 people relocated from this land, but maybe 1,000. And over the years, over the decades, a few hundred remain, if that. Can you describe the laws that have been passed to get you to leave and how they impact your living conditions today?
Well, they tried everything in their book. They told us that we cannot repair our homes. We cannot do this or you cannot do that. But for some of us, I'm not trying to incriminate myself here, but I, with the help of the people, helped me remunch my whole gun up here. And then now my roof is leaking so bad. And now I'm trying to loan in for a support. But other than that, yeah, they try everything in their book to get us out of here. It's like we're naturally here. Spiritually, we're here, but legally and technically, we're not. We don't exist. That's how they talk and all that. And even these central government from both sides, yeah, they might have some ideas for us and all that, but just, you know, nothing more than a dilemma for us. That's why some of us resisted everything. The last eviction notice that we ever got out here was back in 2006. That was from John McCain. He wanted to do this at the forced relocation. Yeah, I myself got letters from him. So far, I only got two letters, and I never got the third one. They were trying to buy, I guess, the dignities from the people here, you know, with this thing here. I was told if I cooperate with them, if I don't give them any trouble, if I go out and sign, I guess $5,000 was in the pot for me. But I never did because, you know, some of us, you know, but we don't know money. Probably can easily get roll or drink it over in 3 nights or something. But I'm not calling. It's nothing here, you know.
$5,000, huh?
Peabody makes more than $5,000 here. Now, if they start coming in, if they wanted to mine it, you know, like how they wanted it. But so far, I hope that they get off Black Mesa. Because, like, way before Peabody coming on to Black Mesa, the indigenous people of Black Mesa used to live a long life, like 102 years old. But to this day, what we're dealing with right now is the Peabody malaria there. Because that's all that created it. Black lungs, you know, silicosis, you know, all these respiratory related. And now out here at this time too, you can smell the sulfur dioxide there. It's in the air.
From the coal mines.
Yeah, from the coal mine, from the burning coal.
So they're mining coal here on Black Mesa for energy. Yet you don't have any access to electricity here.
Not whatsoever. But people are, yeah, Las Vegas and then part of Southern California there. They are the ones that are benefiting from these things. And then our water used to go down to the, you know, 273 miles across the desert to Laughlin, Nevada there. And then here you can see I don't have any running water. and all that. And they say all the good, pristine water was going there for corporation, and the people out here, they're drinking dirty water.
Leonard, thank you for being with us on Radio Curious. There are three questions we ask at the end of an interview. And the first one is there an epiphany or an aha moment that you could share with our listeners?
Like when the relocation thing just started it, some other people went for it. Then some of us didn't. The one that stayed behind, the Navajo Human Rights Commission did a report on the relocation thingy and saying that the whole thing, the whole idea was injustice here that was done to the people here. And that's what gave us, you know, the inspiration there. Then from our elderly people that passed on, and then our late parents that passed on, each and every one of them said before their passing that, do not give up the land for the monetary thingy there, because that's what it's about. So that's why we, you know, we're still here. Because like I was saying earlier, because in our culture here, money is never a matter to the people here. In today's world, these politicians, they talk loud, they sound like where money can be eaten. And all that, but it's not. See, you know, like in beforehand, like our ancestors and our forefathers, you know, went through this thing without money. Until, I guess, after the 1800, after they were, like, incarcerated in Fort Sumter, then after they said, when they were freed, then they were told, okay, this is money here and all that.
What would you like to do with the rest of your one precious life?
I would like to enjoy and harmonize with nature like the way it was intended to be for our culture here, harmonizing with nature here, and to some good people that are left in this world here. I know there are very few now.
And is there a book you could recommend to our listeners?
Because I'm from the old school. There's an Indian rock band that used to be around in the 70s called The Exit. You know, listen to it, and you know, they were for real. And everything that they sung about, what they said, and everything, you know, we're living it today.
Leonard, thank you for being with us on Radio Curious.
Yes, thank you.
Leonard Benally, a Diné elder, died on October 11, 2013. Diné is the indigenous name for the Navajo people. Instead of a book, Leonard Benally recommends Exit, X-I-T. That's an indigenous rock band from the 1970s. This conversation with Leonard Benally was recorded in August of 2012 and originally aired on Radio Curious in October 2013. Over 400 Radio Curious programs may be found on our website, radiocurious.org. They're free as my gift to you. I hope you enjoy them. The phone is 707-462-6541, and email is curious@radiocurious.org. Christina Onnestad is our assistant producer. I'm host and producer Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.